So this week is Parshas Shoftim, and the Seder begins Shoftim v'Shoytrim, judges and magistrates, and police. Shoftim in modern Hebrew, Shoytrim are police, enforcers. So you've got the Shofet is the judge and the Shoter is the enforcer. Titen lecha b'chol sherecha, you have to set up wherever you have a town, a village, a city, a gate. So that's one of the dina, one of the laws that we are commanded to do when we come into the land. And we're commanded to have a justice system that is just. Lisata mishpat, lisakipunim, not to recognize faces, not to have bias, not to take bribes, and to chase justice justly. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdif. Then we have some other dinim about what happens if we find somebody who's worshipping idols. And then the Torah says, "Ki yipolim imcha dovel ha-mishpat." If what happens if you don't know the law? Bein dam ledam, bein din ledin, between one tamei blood or tahor blood, between judgment, nega lenega, between different kinds of leprosy. Divrei rivoi, some people are arguing. Vekamto, you should get up. Violisa la moka mashivcha shemikach. So go up to Yerushalayim or wherever it is that the based in Hagodah, the great court is sitting, and you come to the Kohanim or the Levium and to the judge, Ashiya Bayom Mahim, who will be in that day. And you should give him the question, and they'll tell you Mishpat, the law. And you've got to do what they say. Al piha Torah asheyoyrucha, according to the law that they teach you, al mishpat asheyoyimlucha, and the judgment that they give you, tasa, you got to do lo isosir min adova, you're not allowed to deviate from what they tell you, yomin or smoil, left, right or left. And then we have the din of zokin mamre, that somebody who doesn't do what the based in Haggadah says, so he gets put to death. Then the next din is Kisova el Oretz. You come to the land that God is giving you and inherit it, and you settle in it, and you say, Osim alai melech, I want to give me a king. Kechol ha-goyim, like all the nations. Soim tosim alech melech. So that's one of the last mitzvahs. We come into the land, we have to appoint a king. We have to get rid of the memory of Amalek, and we have to build the Beis HaMikdash. These are the last three mitzvahs. So, when I was a kid and we were learning, this is the one place where, even as a child, I felt like, because we would learn a Chumash Rashi, and Rashi says, you're not allowed to deviate from what they tell you to do, yomin or smoil, right or left. And Rashi says, bringing the Sifri, even if the judge tells you that your right hand is your left hand, and he tells you that your left hand is your right hand, you have to do what he says. It's interesting that the Yerushalmi doesn't say that. It says only if he says on your right that it's the right, and the left it's the left, you have to listen. But if he tells you to, the right is your left is your right, you don't have to listen. But that's not how the Bavli, that's not how our tradition reads this. And, you know, the Ramban says, even if he tells you, you know, eat this piece of chaza, you know, eat this piece of chalef, you have to do what he says. If he says, kill this person, and you think that this person is innocent, you have to kill this person, because the Torah says you're not allowed to deviate. You have to obey the law as it is given to you by the shofet, by the judge. You're not allowed to deviate right or left. And you have to accept upon yourself that the correctness is not what you think is the correctness, but only what he thinks is the correctness. And so therefore, if you are faced with administering or executing a decision that you feel is unjust, you have to do it as an act of faith. You know, as a kid already. And I look back and it's like, oh, I don't know. It seems very hard, you know, it seems very hard. Why would the Torah ask us? Why would the Torah ask this of us? That we set aside what we know as being right and left and accept. That was always hard for me. It's interesting, there's a Medrash. The Medrash brings a posuk in Mishle. In Proverbs, the verse says, King Solomon speaking, Lech el nemola otzel, go, lazy man, go to the ant. Re'ed rocheo v'chachom, go look at her ways and become wise. Asha'in la kotzin shoiter emoshel, an ant doesn't have a deputy sheriff, you know, doesn't have a policeman, doesn't have, there's no kind of enforcer. Tochin b'kayitz lachma, and she prepares all summer her bread. Ogra b'kotzim acholen, at the harvest time, you know, she has what to eat. Admosai otzel tishkov, how long, lazy man, are you going to lie there? Mosai tokim mishnasech, when are you going to get up from your sleep? So the Medrash brings this Medrash, and we can see, because already in the verse in Proverbs, it talks about, you know, shoiter and kotzin, you know. So here we are commanded to have shoiftim v'shoiterim, we had judges, magistrates, and enforcers, and there we have the nemola, the ant that doesn't need it. Ma ro'a shloima, what did Shloima see in the ant to tell us to go and learn, to tell the lazy man to go learn? So the Rabbonon Amri, the rabbi said, anamolazi gimul batim, that in an ant colony or an ant hill, whatever, there are three levels. And so the ant doesn't just dump the food in the top level, because there it'll get wet, and it doesn't dump it on the bottom level, because there it would get moldy. So it goes to the trouble of, even when it gets there, to make sure that it goes into the right place. And then the Chachamim says the whole ant's lifetime is only 6 months, because it doesn't have gidin atzomais, it doesn't have bones and sinews. And so something that only has bones and sinews has a very short life. And in its entire lifetime, it eats chito umechtze, it eats 1.5 grains of wheat. That's enough to sustain an ant over the period of its life, 1.5 grains of wheat. And what does it do? It goes and it gathers more and more and more and more. So Rabbi Tanchuma says, so why does an ant do that? Because, it says, even though I've only had a short life, but maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe God will make me live longer, you know, and I don't have to die just because nature says so, God could give me life. So it keeps on going. So Shlomo says, Re'ei Drocheho, it's not just that the fact that the ant is busy and doesn't, is not lazy, but also that it has faith. And so we are supposed to do the same, and supposed to pile up mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim, good deeds, for when we're going to need it in Olam Habo. So drocheho, the verse says her ways, not just one way. Her ways. So the Chachamim says it also, an ant doesn't steal from another ant. And they bring a story that an ant dropped a grain and all the other ants from the whole colony came and each one sniffed it, but they left it alone until that original ant came back and picked it up. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says that an ant, you know, that they opened an ant heap and they found 300 bushels of wheat had been gathered there, you know, and its whole agenda is 1.5 grains, and because 300 is always a guzma, it's always an exaggeration. But it's interesting that King Solomon, when he's telling us to go and look at the ant, he doesn't say, look at the ant because it has so much faith. He says, look at the ant because it's not a otzel. It's not lazy. So this word otzel doesn't really mean lazy in the traditional sense. To be lazy in the sense that Shlomo HaMelech means it, it means to refuse to look, to be asleep. To be asleep means to be unaware of your connections, to be unaware of the truth of your connections. So otzel in this context means that you don't see through the screen, that you don't see through the opaqueness of life to see what's preventing you from having faith. The Namala has faith because it's not an otzel, right? It has faith because it's not lazy, which is to say that our laziness interferes with our faith. So it obviously doesn't mean I can't get out of bed. My laziness means I refuse to make the effort to look through the cloud or the curtain or whatever it is that obscures the truth. That's the significance or the symbolism of my laziness. That I don't want to make the effort to, because if I were to make the effort, then I would find faith, which is like the Namola, even though it knows it's not going to live more than a short time, and so once it's gathered a grain and a half, it's enough, and yet it keeps on gathering, because what? So the metaphor that the Medrash gives is that it says, Ula HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, maybe God will have, Shema Yigzar Alay HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chayim. Maybe God will decree life on me. So then I'm going to have food ready. So what does that mean in our context? See, if I'm ready to break through my own opaqueness and to find out my own connection to the divine, you know, then I'm not going to settle for this spiritual poverty that I tend to settle for and live in, you know, and instead I'm going to, you know, be much more active and much more zoriz and you know, much more quick to make changes and to, you know, look instead of, you know, so much of our life we spend settling. Why do we settle? So the atzlus, the laziness that Shlomo HaMelech is talking about here has, you know, it results in us settling for less than we ought. Because if we could only look through and see how we connected, like we said in the past, how we connected the Atika Kaddisha, you know, that we arose in the thought, Yisrael Olu B'machashava, that we're connected to the original thought from before the creation of the world. Atika Talia Milsa, that whenever we deal with Atika, whenever we connect with that original thought, then we ourselves represent something completely without any boundaries. And then, you know, we really access the pure light with which we're filled, really. So the fact that we can't access Atika Kaddisha, the fact that we can't access that original thought with which we arose even long before creation when there were no boundaries, the fact that we can't only is our own, it's our own curtain that we set up. That's the meaning of Atzlus. So the Medrash brings this whole the story of the ant and King Solomon's, you know, admonition that we all need to go and learn from the ant in order to say Shoftim v'shoytrim. The Nois Desha asks a good question. He says, what's the difference essentially between Shoftim v'shoytrim and Melech? Because we have in this week's Sedra, first we get commanded to have the Shoftim, the judge, and we see you have to obey the judge even if he tells you right's left, left's right. And if you argue with the judge, you get put to death, like the Zokin Mamre, right? So you have somebody who's at the level, we're not talking about somebody who just argues with the Shoftim, but if you have one of the Sanhedrin who argues with the Shoftim, so somebody who is at the level of being able to, you know, have a counter argument. And he goes home and he says to the people in his village, you know, I just come from Yerushalayim, and the Beis Din, the Shefet there, he paskin the wrong halacha, and really he said like this, but we're going to do like this. So that's the din of Zokin Mamre, and he gets put to death. If he refuses to recant and he carries on with his psak. So in what way is a shofet less than a melech? And there is one way, that by a melech there's no din of Zokin Mamre. That this din of Zokin Mamre, that the elder who rebels only applies with the shofet. And it's interesting that with the Zokin Mamre, if he goes home and he tells his people, you know, I've just come from Yerushalayim and they're based in there, they paskin everything wrong, and this is the halacha really. But if I were you, I wouldn't disobey the Beis Din. I would do what they say, lamasa. You know, practically speaking, we're going to all have to do what they say because they have the power. But I'm telling you that halachically, you know, they're wrong. That's not a Zokin Mamre. A Zokin Mamre is somebody who advises people to actually practically disobey, not just theoretically. And we know that in halacha there is a concept of, you know, being mevara the halacha, and then there's the maaser, you know, how are we going to act, you know. And sometimes sometimes even very very big brains, like there's a famous story with the Beis Yosef who was in Eretz Yisrael, of Yosef Karo, he was in Tzfas, and in Krakow there was Reb Moshe Isserles, and there was a shala that had come. I think it was, and the subject was a Yerusha. So two people had inherited, and they had an argument, and they came to Reb Moshe Isserles to ask the halacha, you know, how do they settle the argument in their inheritance between them. And he paskened, and he was mevara the halacha, and he told them what to do, and then he sent his tshuva, he sent his response to Reb Yosef Karo to Tzfas, and then the letter came back from Reb Yosef Karo saying, no, you're wrong, this is what you do. And immediately the same day he got the letter, Reb Moshe Isserles went to the brothers and he said to them, no, regardless of what I was mevara the halacha, this is not, practically speaking, the Rebbe of all of us, the head of the Beis Din of Mora de Asruk de Chol Haaretz, he's Reb Yosef Karo, he's there in Tzfas, and he said that I'm wrong, and that practically speaking, this is how you have to administer the estate. And Reb Moshe Isserles didn't go back on his halacha, right? He still argued. I mean, he didn't say, oh, Reb Yosef Karo is right and I'm wrong, halachically speaking. He didn't have to do that. He still maintained that his logic and his svara and his psak was correct. However, Reb Yosef Karo is the head. So it doesn't matter what I think and what I paskin and what I decide, he's got the say. And so he immediately told the brothers that they need to do things differently. So that you have a Zokin Mamre, you know. If he actually directs people to rebel against Beis Din, then he's called a Zokin Mamre. But if he just paskins and he says, I think they're wrong, so he's not a Zokin Mamre. With a king, that's not the case. So the Zokin Mamre is the difference between the Shefet, and the difference between a judge and a king is that with a king, you're not even allowed to argue. And this, you know, brings to one of the difficult areas of I guess ancient thinking, not so ancient thinking. We still have this halacha gepaskent in the Rambam. You know, Mashiach is coming. He's going to be a man. He's going to be a person. He's going to be a melech. He's going to be a king. He's going to have all these, you know, rights. And up until the 16th century, you know, people were still arguing about the divine rights of kings. And even into the 17th century, you know, Charles I went to the gallows, he was beheaded, still insisting on his rights, you know, that he's a king, and therefore his decisions and his things are divine. nobody on earth can argue with him, and you can't judge him, and you know, and he was ready to die for that principle. And mostly today in the world, people don't really go with this divine right of kings, but we do. And how come we do? What's the meaning of this idea of the divine right? That Malchus, that when you're in the sphere of Malchus, you're not judgeable by the normal standards. How come? So the thing is, the Noyes Desha says that the king, it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you're not allowed to argue with the king, right? Not even if you have a halacha, whatever. The king is a king. On the other hand, the king is not allowed to make a mistake. And we find in scripture, if we read the history, like for instance, King Shaul was given a command. Shmuel the prophet says to him, you know, go and make war on Amalek. You know, that's now that we've got a king, that's almost the first thing that has to happen. War on Amalek. And kill everybody. Don't leave anything alive. And then Shaul leaves alive the king and Meitav Atzoyin, the best of the sheep and the cattle, so he wanted to bring offerings. And immediately the prophet Samuel says to him, finished, Yos king, that's it. God has taken away your sovereignty and has given it to somebody else. So what was wrong? It wasn't such a terrible thing. You can fix it, you know, like Shmuel did. You know, Samuel, he went and he killed the king, and they put to death all the sheep and cattle. So what was so wrong? You know, right, so he made a mistake. A king's not allowed to make a mistake. When King David, when he made a mistake in the halacha, and he put tzivo on the house of Shaul, and he took from Mephibosheth, and a voice came out from heaven saying, Yeravam and Rehoboam, Rehoboam's your grandson. In his day already, the kingdom's going to split into the kingdom of Israel, the kingdom of Judah. You ruined it, you can't fix it. You know, like, wait a minute, you know, if I made a mistake, so I can fix it, but a king can't fix it. It's very interesting. A shofet, a judge, can fix it. It's a mitzvah, you know. You made a mistake, somebody shows you made a mistake, so you make a proclamation in the whole land saying, you know, that halacha that we paskened, it was wrong. Big deal. But a king can't do that. Why not? What is it about it? So here, in this sedra, we're really getting to uncover in ourselves who we are. That we have at some level, we have a shoftim v'shochtim, we have inside us a judge. And then deeper and very, very deep, we have inside us a king. So first of all, we have to put the judge on the throne. When the judge is on the throne, then we get to access that part of us which is the king. But if we try and do it the wrong way around, we're gonna make a mess, because as I said, the king doesn't have second chances. You know, there's the union of malucha, that part of ourselves, you know, we're not allowed to get it wrong. So the Torah says there's three things that the king is not allowed to do. King is not allowed to have many horses, the Torah says. Not allowed to have many horses because he'll end up taking the Jewish people down to Egypt, because the Arabian horses, those were the best, and so he's going to go for those horses. We're going to end up back in Egypt. The next thing, the Torah says, Le'yabalei Noshim, he's not allowed to have too many wives because they're going to turn his heart away from the worship of God. And the third thing is, Kesev el-Zov le'yabalei, is not allowed to have too much gold and silver. And there, the Torah doesn't actually give us a reason. But immediately after that, it says, the next mitzvah is V'kosav lo'y, it's Mishnah Torah Zois. He has to write himself a Sefer Torah. So the Noyes Desha says, we can assume from there that the reason for not a king shouldn't have a lot of money and shouldn't be involved in the stock market and trying to increase his wealth and stuff like that, is because of Bittul Torah, because he's going to end up spending his life as a businessman rather than in contemplation and study of the Torah. So there's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that says that in the book of Ecclesiastes, it says, Bikish Koheles Limtzu Divrei Chefetz. Koheles, that's a pseudonym for King Solomon, the author of the book. Bikish Koheles Limtzu Divrei Chefetz. Koheles sought to find precious words or things of value. So the Gemara says, what does that mean, that King Solomon looked for things of value, for precious things? So there's a machlokes argument, Rav and Shmuel. So Chadama, one of them said, Bikish Koheles Lias Kamoisha. Koheles wants to be like Moshe. That's a precious thing, right? So a voice comes out from heaven and says, Leikom Oid Novi Kamoisha. No prophet has ever arisen like Moshe. So you can't be like Moshe. So the other one, Shmuel, we don't know, Rav or Shmuel, Shmuel says, no. Shlomo could have been like Moshe, because Moshe was a prophet and Shlomo was a king. So, yeah, it's true that there's never risen a prophet like Moshe, but a king like Moshe, sure. So what does it mean that he sought something precious? My bikish keheles limtze divrei chefetz shebikish lodun dinin shebelev. That Shlomo HaMelech wanted to be like Mashiach, and he wanted to be able to judge without resorting to the normal process of adjudication. So you have how do you judge? Somebody comes and says such and such a person did such. You have a prosecutor who accuses somebody of a crime, and then the prosecutor brings witnesses and evidence and lays it in front of the judge, and then the other witnesses come and whatever, and there's a defense. And Shlomo HaMelech wanted to do away with all that, and in a sense he wanted to be like the original Moshe before Va'atasechse, the story of Yisroi, who when Moshe just used to on his own, he used to listen to cases and adjudicate it. And like we said, V'herecho b'yiras Hashem, that Mashiach is going to have that ability to sniff and to smell the truth about, when people come in front of him with an argument, he's not going to need evidence, he'll just be able to smell. Shlomo HaMelech wanted that. So then, a voice came out from heaven and said, Yoshe divrei emes al pishnayim edim, it requires two witnesses, and it's only through two witnesses that you can do justice, and that you can adjudicate. You can't do this without resorting to the standard procedures. So that's Rav and Shmuel trying to understand what Shlomo HaMelech meant when he said he looks for something precious. The Na'os Deshe said, you see, Shlomo, we know that he did have a lot of horses and he did have a lot of wives. So here Rav and Shmuel are really trying to understand Shlomo. Shlomo wants to be like Moshe. What was Moshe? Moshe brought us out of Egypt. So the Torah says that the king mustn't have a lot of horses because he'll take the Jewish people down to Egypt. So Rav says, Shlomo HaMelech, he wanted to be like Moshe, that he says, sure, I'll take them down to Egypt, but I'll be like Moshe, I'll take them out of Egypt as well. Shmuel says he wants to have a lot of wives, right? Because what's the problem with a lot of wives? That they'll turn his heart away from God. So Shlomo HaMelech wants to, what was the example? Don dinin shebelev. He wants to be able to judge judgments in the heart, meaning he wants to be able to look at his own heart and see when he's being turned away from God. So Rav and Shmuel are seeing these two things. And what does he hear from heaven? Al pishnaim edim. Shlomo, you didn't learn enough. You've been bittul Torah. That was the third one. You haven't been learning. So if you'd have learned, you'd have known that you're not allowed to do that. The Na'os Deshe says, this is all a metaphor. That the king is not allowed to have horses. Why? Because he'll take the Jewish people to Egypt. So that means he may do something to harm other people. And he's not allowed to have a whole lot of wives. Why? Because they'll turn his heart away. Ah, so that is because he's not allowed to do something that will harm himself. And what is the key to both of them? Learning the Torah. He's not allowed to do something that will interfere with his learning the Torah, because learning the Torah and staying connected with the Torah is the key to preventing the melech, to preventing the king from hurting other people and hurting himself. So now, we come back to the beginning. Shoiftim v'shoitrim. First, before you can access that part of yourself, which is the king, you have to have a mechanism to judge yourself and then force yourself to do the right thing. You know, in the 12-step program, the 10th step is we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. It's an amazing thing, right? That if you do a personal inventory, if you look at yourself, and then when you do something wrong, not to fudge around, you know, not to make excuses, but to admit it. It doesn't say then that the next step is then to fix it, you know, because in the process of being honest about the things we do wrong, we already awaken in us that part of us which fixes it. You know, we spend so much time thinking, how am I going to get myself to do the right thing? And really, that's the model of the society in which we live, is that I have to do the right thing, you have to do the right, we all have to do the right thing, so we need therefore police, because if we don't do the right thing ourselves, then we need people to force us to do the right thing, and that is, you know, part of the model of how the world works, right? And yet the emes is that shoiftim v'shoitrim, that they're the same people, that the judge and the enforcer is the same person. Wherever you go, b'chol sherech, because if you really look at yourself, and I say to myself, you know, Heshi, this, what you just did, this wasn't the right thing to do. If I do it 100% emes and don't make excuses, right? David HaMelech, right? When the Nosan HaNovi comes to him and he says, you did wrong, right? He doesn't fudge. He doesn't say, ah, yeah, but. He says, true. Chotosi, ovisi, pushati, I sinned. I did bad, right? That's the fixing. That's the shoitrim. Those are the enforcers. Those words that we say within ourselves that are the admission, the true admission, the acceptance of the responsibility, you know, and seeing inside myself what it is that I've done and how it is that I mess up and you know, the real honest look at myself. That is shoiftim v'shoitrim. And that's the meaning of afilu yoimri l'cho al smoil shehu yimin v'al smin yimin shehu smoil. Even if they tell you that the right hand is the left hand and the left hand is the right hand, meaning, even if the judge in me tells me that he's the enforcer in me, and the enforcer in me tells me that he's the judge in me, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. I can get away from the paradigm of having to, you know, make a decision to have a change and this and that. None of that's real. What's real is being emes. We were saying that the union of Titin emes li Yaakov, what does it mean that Yaakov is the middah of emes? He's the only one we see in the Torah, you know, who keeps on being clever, right, and cunning. And like he said to Rachel, you know, Ochiv Anoichi Beramois, I'm your father's brother. When it comes to cheating, he cheats, I cheat, I'll cheat first. I'll beat him to the... But he never lied to himself. Yaakov, in his whole life, never kidded himself that what he was doing was emes if it wasn't emes. Did that mean that he did it? He didn't do different, but he was emes with himself. That's the whole secret of the shoytim v'shoytrim, that they're the same. We don't need to have somebody. It's like we don't need to make a decision to, I'm going to be changing my life. I'm going to be doing things differently. I mean, it's very nice. People think that that's what they need to do. As we see, you know, very often we make decisions to change our life and then it doesn't really happen. Like, on January the 1st, I'm going to start a diet and I'm going to start to, you know, exercising, and, you know, by May, I'm going to have lost all this weight. I'm going to be great. I'm going to look good. It doesn't work. Why? Because we're thinking in terms of shoftim and shoytrim as two separate issues. You know, and the emes is that when I come to eat something, if I say to myself, Hashi, you're really hungry, emes, you really need this, I've already got shoftim v'shoytrim working together. If I can be this emes with myself, then I have access, then I will have access to my melech. And at the level of melech, then I will find that the only problem is, am I doing something that would hurt somebody else? Am I doing something that would hurt me? If I'm doing something that would hurt somebody else, to do that, then that's not the melech. The meaning of the melech, to access the melech, is to be in touch with that part of ourselves which does not harm either the self or the other. Soim tosim olecha melech. Like the Medrash says that, you know, as soon as one king dies, you have to put another king. Soim tosim. So it's true that the melech, you know, is not given a second chance. You know, if the melech made a mistake, that's it. Ois, finished. But then you have to put another melech. Unlike the shoftim v'shoytrim there, a person can get it wrong and then try it again. I bless you. I bless you to be able to reconcile the left and the right, and not to feel like, you know, that the Torah is asking us to do things which are really unreasonable. That really, this is about finding within ourselves that part of us which is both left and right, and neither left nor right, to be really integrated. Yeah. Shkoyach. Thank you.